I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
It's Window Nation's semi-annual sale, and it's a big deal. Right now, get 50% off all windows along with no interest for 5 years plus bonus savings when you schedule a consult today. If your windows leak, get foggy or hot, or you're paying high utility bills, that's a big deal. With Window Nation's semi-annual sale, you can replace your windows and save a big deal, too. Schedule a no-obligation in-home estimate now. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Inside the Birds is back. What's going on, everyone? Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan here. Adam, OTAs are back, and obviously there's a lot to discuss. We're going to get into the new look Carson Wentz. We'll talk about some rookie ups and rookie downs. We'll look at some of the newcomers, how they're adapting to their new surroundings. You know, a lot of free agent signings. And, of course, we're going to answer a lot of questions today for the Ask ITB segment that has become a very popular part of the podcast. Before we really start off, though, I just want to say you and I, we extend our well wishes, our best wishes, our prayers, everything that we have to Nick Foles and his family. Clearly, they're going through something. You know, it's been kept quiet. So whatever it is, we wish the best for Nick Foles. He's a tremendous, forget the football player, tremendous human being, A-plus human being. And I know your thoughts are with him as well.
Absolutely. Great guy, good family man, good family background, does everything the right way. And we certainly wish him very well. And the Jaguars, you know, they've made it very clear they're going to support Nick and whatever it is that he's dealing with. And as Doug Marone, the head coach, said, he sends, you know, he suggested everyone wish Nick well, and we were doing that.
Yeah, we do wish Nick the best. Moving on from Nick and going to the main man here in Philadelphia, Carson Wentz. I think it was a huge week, not necessarily for Carson, but for the fan base to just kind of like take a big, deep breath. Know that Carson got on the field. They were very inexplicably covert about when he was going to get on the field or not, and then there he was getting on the field for the start of OTAs. The one thing that I think, Adam, that really sticks out is Carson talked about a new diet, losing weight, trying to make sure that he keeps his body, which has been banged up every year he's been in the league, and he's a young kid, just trying to make it right for the NFL. And it looked different to me. I mean, you look at him, and it looks a little bit more lithe, if I could say that. Did it stand out to you, just watching him out there on the practice?
Yeah, so we get only a certain amount of time, the media does, to be in front of the players or watch practice. And we've had, at the time we were taping this, we've had two. We're only going to get two of the first 2 weeks. And then the following week, we get some. And then we get all. The mandatory camp is completely open to us, which is great. He looked thinner. I think his playing weight had been around 240, 6'5", 240.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what he weighs. He looked about, he looked in the 220s, high 220s.
Mm-hmm.
He just, his legs, like if you see them, they're not as thick.
Correct.
And we'll get into body types. It's one of the things I look for because you can't overjudge anything. It's just football and shorts. But body types I'm big on, and we'll talk about some of the stuff that I saw. One that I did not know was coming, and I was kind of laughing, standing next to someone who works for the Eagles. I'm like, did you guys feed him like 50 milkshakes as an offensive lineman? I'm like, what the hell are you feeding these guys here?
Ooh,
we were just laughing.
The Joel Embiid diet.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll get to that. But Carson looked good from a physical standpoint. We'll get from just, he's thinner.
220 seems 220, right.
Like 228, 225.
I would be worried if it was any lower than 220.
Well, Jeff, yeah. I remember Joe Flacco telling me his rookie season he was 228.
Right, and he's about 6 foot six, six, 6'7"?
6'6 and a quarter.
Yeah.
He thought he was too light, so he got up to 245.
Mm-hmm.
So his playing weight's between 240 and 250. That's what I think as he gets older, Carson does, he'll figure out what the right weight is. But what he said was, in his little media get-together, he wanted to feel stronger. He wanted to feel better. Feeling stronger does not mean you put on weight. You could become a vegetarian like me. Well, you find a way to build your body up
right.
by weightlifting, by nutrition,
mm-hmm.
Getting better rest.
Flexibility,
right?
That
when you become a vegetarian, I have zero inflammation. When I travel long distances, when I go to Seattle, it's a 6-hour flight, I get right off where other people are like, oh, God, I'm so sore.
Creaky knees and everything.
I don't get that because I don't eat meat. So, and I digest, I don't have a lot of milk. So Carson looks good from that standpoint. Didn't know when I saw him last week. I love that he was not wearing the brace.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not. And the other thing is, also, I should mention this as we get through the roster here at quarterback, Clayton Thorson, who tore his ACL late in 17, he was not wearing a brace, and boy, did he look good.
And that's good. You're about a year and a half from the injury. He played all year for Northwestern last year with the brace on. And I always think it's kind of, you talk about that collective sigh of relief for the fans. I think for a quarterback, that's a big step when you get rid of that knee brace and you feel like yourself again. In fact, I think with Clayton Thorson, I don't know if the best is yet to come is the right term, but clearly this kid might have been ranked higher, rated or drafted higher if he had not tore his ACL going into the year. I mean, they had to have him on a pitch count.
No question.
He could be one of those kids who winds up being a little bit better than you think just because now you're getting him a year removed from that surgery and you're getting the more accurate version of what he is.
Jeff, I'd said on our post-draft podcast, and you could find it on the radio.com or WIP website, and I said that had he not suffered the torn ACL, he could have gone as high as the third,
mm-hmm.
but we'll never know because his senior year was not that good.
Right.
Had he not suffered that injury in the bowl game. It was right before 17 ended. I mean, you're looking at a guy that the Eagles probably wouldn't have drafted because they were not going to spend a third round pick on a quarterback.
Sure.
But they got a break. He's big. He's got a strong arm. I'm going to give you one play. He threw a post route about 50 yards in the air. And Braxton Miller, who's not that fast, he's not a straight line speed guy. He's a tall slot receiver.
Right.
He just couldn't get it. The pass was, he threw it with what we called anticipation. He threw it out there where only the receiver could get it, and the kid couldn't get it. But
that's the beauty, by the way, of OTAs. You see things that you know you will not see normally during the regular season.
Exactly. They're not going to play.
It's not necessarily the Thorson part of that. It's the idea that Braxton Miller is going to be 50 yards downfield when he's pretty much a middle-of-the-field slot guy.
Plus, but, he won't be on the roster.
Well, that's a good point, too. Although I had him as a sleeper. You never know. But clearly, not catching up to a 50-yard bomb isn't going to help him. Lou Riddick, over the weekend, I don't know if you saw it, your former colleague at ESPN, he probably reignited a Wentz flame in Philadelphia with a tweet that, and listen, it's just a tweet, it's just a prediction, but when it comes from a guy like Lou Riddick, it tends to carry a little more weight, and it said something to the effect of, I expect Carson Wentz to be the front runner for MVP this year. So, and now, he didn't just decide to wake up that day, maybe he was at OTAs, I have no idea, but I'm sure he talks to some people in the organization, but he must get the sense, based on his conversations, that the team is really happy with how Carson has looked now with the weight loss and just getting ready for this year and what they expect from him.
Yeah, so if you're looking at Twitter, I would say Tuesday afternoon or Tuesday evening, a lot of reporters were just gushing over Carson. So I was there, and I'm going to put it to you this way. I have the same feeling I have about Wentz now that I did in the June camp of 17. So let me go back to the 17 June camp. The first one.
This is after his rookie year.
Yes.
Right.
It was May. He did not look as good because they had adjusted his mechanics. The quarterback coach, right. DeFilippo, made it an adjustment and he didn't take to it yet. So we got access to Carson in practice in that first June camp. There were two of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was the one before the non-mandatory one. And I'm like, oh my God. OMG. Oh my God. I'm like, wow. Okay. I saw three practices. This is really special.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jeff, as you know, and we'll give the visual. When you come off the field, there's a media entrance and there's a player-coach entrance. We're not supposed to go in the player-coach entrance. I've done it before, but of course they've told me not to do that again. So I went into the media entrance.
Such a rule breaker.
I know. To the right, the left is the coaches. To the right is the media. And I'm about to walk. I'm walking in because right before you go to the locker room, and I see someone from the Eagles front office. I'm like, I said to him, huh, how about number 11? And he gives me the thumbs up and he gives me a wink. And he acknowledged that what I'm seeing is what he's seeing.
Uh-huh. The old nonverbal communication.
And I was like, let's just see what happens to the next camp. And the June mandatory camp, there were all the reporters were writing about it. And he became, for fantasy, and we don't talk about fantasy much on here, he was my breakout player of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And you think of it, let's fast forward it to now. Now, he was incredible, and we'll get to that practice in a second. If you look at all the passing targets that they have now, Aguilar, Slot, Deshaun, they've never had a deep threat since Carson's been here, a true one. Matt Collins, you could say that, but he barely played. And Mike Wallace broke his leg.
I think Torrey Smith is probably the best example, and he wasn't a very good pass
catcher. He would be, right. Okay, I'm sorry. He would be, but he doesn't command the football like Deshaun does.
Correct.
Alshon Jeffrey, Arcega Whiteside, we'll see what his role is. Matt Collins, if he ever gets healthy. Zach Ertz, Dallas Goedert, you're six or seven pass targets deep. Carson's never had this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the offensive line's in question just because of Peter's age. We know how he go in and out of games. But as someone with the Eagles said to me, don't forget Jason had been rehabbing his ACL the previous year. So maybe now that he's back, he's not overcompensating for the knee and he injures the quad or the hamstrings, so maybe he won't have to leave games.
Right.
But Brandon Brooks has come back from the torn Achilles. I know that Brandon posted his rehab and he's running now. Great. He posted on Twitter. You can follow him there. That's great.
We'll see what happens.
But they have some there are a couple questions there. But the good thing is, as we said in the last podcast, Jeff,
mm-hmm.
we signed Wisniewski. We'll see when Andre Dillard's ready. I don't know that. I mean, he's just back. Vitae, by the way, is still at guard. He's at right guard. My sense is he's going to stay there because they know what he could do at tackle. I don't see him moving unless he has to, unless Dillard's not ready. Where they suffer an injury with one of these developmental players, I think he'll stay at guard.
Yeah. Getting back to Carson, I think what people forget is that, and there's no doubt there were things that he struggled to do last year, and he obviously had the back injury and coming off the knee injury. But I don't think it's so outlandish to think that this guy can go back to playing at an MVP level, because if you look at last year, as difficult as it was for him, and when he got hurt, he was 5-6, and everybody wants to fixate on the losing record, but this is a guy who last year improved his completion percentage by almost 10 points. It went from 60 to 69.6, right? His passer rating went from 101.9 in 2017, his great year, to 102.2. So by that metric, he had a better year last year than the year before. Now, you and I both know there were some issues that he certainly showed last year that he didn't have the year before. And a lot of that also had to do with the offense, the lack of a speed threat, the things around him, the new coaching. There's a whole lot that goes into it. But he wasn't a terrible quarterback at all. And in fact, in many ways, he was an improved quarterback from the year before.
Yeah, he was conservative. I thought last year it's funny. I wouldn't call them so much checkdowns. I just didn't think he challenge as much. I know the per pass attempt was up by 0.2. That's really not. It was not. It was an intermediate passing game last year.
It was.
They didn't challenge downfield.
Correct.
I just felt, and I know, as you said, almost 10% completion rate, and that's good. Certainly, you're going to take that. That's a positive.
Yeah, 60 to 69 is good.
But man, he missed some throws last year.
Yeah, definitely.
You know that.
Throws.
You watched the tape. He was not. You mentioned in passing. He was playing with a cumbersome brace on his left knee. There's no question he was not the same quarterback. Don't let the numbers fool you, folks. It's all about the tape. He was not the same quarterback. And when you look at, Jeff, the touchdown rate, I mean, he was throwing for 2.5 touchdowns per game on average.
Mm-hmm.
He was just under two per game last season. he had such a feel for the pocket in the passing game 2 years ago. So let's fast forward to this practice on we're taping this Wednesday, so Tuesday.
Right. So the big part is that we're looking to see how it works now that he has that speed threat, Deshaun. Deshaun's here.
Speaking of that.
Yes, that's what I want to get into.
Good transition by you. That's called a transition in radio and broadcasting. So
it's not my first rodeo.
There were in the first half of practice, they were completing a lot of passes to Deshaun, but they weren't really challenging anything. They was in 7-on-7.
Mm-hmm.
Once they got to 11-on-11, or they would take the ball at say the 40 of the defense in 7-on-7, then they started challenging them. And then there was a 35-yard post to Jackson. There's one of these, well, okay, he's going to throw it. Why is he throwing? Because he's not open. He threw it over the defender's hand. Mm. And unfortunately, we don't have tape of it, but I can only describe it to you. It was one of these, and I was standing next to one of the PR guys, and the guy goes, did you see that? I said, I caught the second half of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is crazy. So the pass that's on the Eagles' Twitter, let me fast forward to that, to Ertz, which you can see at the beginning of the play when he avoided the pass rusher, the left defensive end, and he stepped up, and then Ertz got separation, and he threw it with anticipation to the sideline where Zach has got to go get it,
yeah.
And he got it. You could see him running into the picture, into your face. And I said on Twitter, and it got a lot of likes, there were so many passes like that in practice, Jeff, where either threw the guy open with anticipation, or throw it right on the guy. And we're all set. You see it on Twitter. All the reporters that were there were like, this is.
So it sounds like you have that feeling too.
I have the same exact feeling.
You got that feeling from 2 years ago that
Jeff,
this is headed for.
As I said a couple minutes ago, he is exactly where he was 2 years ago. You know the difference is? He's smarter. He knows now to protect himself.
And thinner.
Yes, he's in better physical shape. And the available passing targets, and by the way, Jeffrey's not there right now. I don't know if he's taking time off. He doesn't have to be there. When everyone's there in the summer, and we're going to get to Dallas Goedert because I've got to talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
This group of passing targets is by far the best that Doug Peterson's had to work with as a play caller.
It has to be. We are going to get to that. Before we do move on to those guys, I want to talk a little bit about the rookies. And it's going to be difficult to make any kind of judgments on Andre Dillard. He's just starting in there. The offensive linemen are limited in these non-contact practices. The one thing that I heard from scouts that they questioned, or they all loved him, but they said he would probably need to get a little bit bigger and stronger at the pro level and really get into that run blocking and show that nastiness. Well, we're not going to see a whole lot of run blocking in non-contact camps anyway, but I think that you would agree that you look at him and you could say, yeah, there's room to add some muscle there and become a bigger, and he's got a year to do that.
Yeah, I would say this. He needs to get stronger physically, and the one challenge that he's going to have is just like a quarterback not playing from under center. Well, as an offensive lineman, there are very few snaps that he took under center. He may not have taken any. I don't. Maybe the people watch his college tape could point out maybe he took a dozen or so plays being a three-point stance for the quarterback being, you know, under center. I mean, that does mean something. If you're going to pass it all the time, the Eagles will run the football. We know that. Now, they're going to be in shotgun quite a bit, but he's got to show that he could be a run blocker at this level because they will run the football. They're not one of these passing offenses that, kind of like Chicago, where the quarterback
Seattle last year, they're not going to hit you with, you know, a gap.
But they're going to be a mixture of it. Right.
Right.
They actually, after Doug's quick start passing all the time, they become more of a balanced offense. And a lot of it has to do with the Evelie, but he believes in both. So it's something we'll track.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about him. And I would tell you from a physical standpoint, I'm like, who is 68? I've never seen this guy before.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know it was Jordan Mailata because he was so big.
Mm.
His legs are tree trunks. I don't know how much weight he put on. Again, I don't know what these guys weigh, but he looks so much bigger physically.
He's going to be fun to watch this training
camp,
especially because I know they got him at tackle now, right?
There was a play, I guess it was a sweep, and
he's out there leading the front with all
that
athleticism.
There are two of them,
and they got to tell him, like, dude, you're not allowed to like flatten guys in OTAs.
He pushed a guy. You know, you're not supposed to. He didn't. He's still learning. He might have put his right hand on the guy's back, but he stoned Brandon Graham,
right?
And I know how they feel about him.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be fascinating to see if, A, he could dress on game day. Because if he can, and it's, God forbid somebody gets hurt, then that means he's one step away from playing. They're onto something, folks. They're, and now, as he has now a year of experience, he's not guessing now. Because I know talking to the Eagles about him, he didn't know what he was doing in the May camp last year.
Sure.
How could he? Yeah, he didn't know football yet.
Yeah.
A little bit better in June. Didn't really know about him. Training camp.
Major strides.
Big, like they've never seen before. And in preseason, as all of our listeners know, because they're diehard Eagle fans, we've never seen anything like this in our lifetime.
No. So hey, this is the position you want to have depth at.
Yes.
So it'll be interesting to watch him when the contact is allowed. You mentioned about the run blocking and just the running game in general, and it's disappointing to see Miles Sanders. Now, look, you get injured, you can't control it. He's got a hamstring injury. It must have happened during the rookie camp, you would think. He hasn't been a part of the OTAs yet.
Mentally, he is. He's there.
Mentally,
just
yeah, I'm sorry.
He's not on the practice field.
I think it's an ominous beginning for a rookie, because these guys need as much, especially running backs, because it ain't like playing the offensive line, or it's not like playing D-line. You have to learn a whole lot more verbiage. You have to do things that you've never done before, pass protection, catching the ball in certain routes, the route tree, everything, blitz pickup, and to not be out there hurts, and now you have to play catch-up.
Yeah, he didn't practice last week. He's not practicing yet. He's missing valuable reps just from a mental standpoint, because Jeff just outlined exactly what he has to learn. You have to know what the checks are. He's going to be using the pass game, as I understand it. They really want to get him involved in that. They think he's really good at it. And by the way, Corey Clement's not working.
Right. Great opportunity for Josh Adams, who came back from shoulder surgery.
That is the biggest story.
Well, that's how you know you're on the bubble and you got to do everything you can.
I'm like, who's this skinny dude? Tall, skinny running back. I'm like, wait a minute. Is that Josh Adams?
Yeah.
So I want to make sure it was 33, not some guy I'd never heard of. And they only have, I think, 7 running backs on the roster. 2 aren't practicing, so it was kind of obvious, because Boston Scott's built like a spark plug.
Right.
You know what Donald Pumphrey looks like, and you know what Smallwood 28 looks like. Mm-hmm. That's him. Now, he looked thin. See, I don't know if because of his shoulder injury, I don't know if he could lift weights, but he took a rep in something.
Right. I've always felt he looked kind of tall and spindly for a running back. He has a very awkward build, but he does have a great downhill momentum type of run. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, look, I think the kid's a good kid. You get to know him. He's a good kid. Oh, yeah. A smart kid. I think he would have done everything he could have done to get out on the field anyway. But when you're a guy like him, or when you're a guy, and we'll talk about it a little bit more, like Sidney Jones, and your early career going back to college has been pocked by injuries, you know that you're already got a strike against you. And Josh came here with an injury. He didn't even participate in OTAs last year. Then he got hurt at the end of the season. And now he had a shoulder surgery. And then he looks at the depth chart and he sees Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders and Corey Clement and all these other guys he's competing with. He's not guaranteed anything. So it's good to see him get out there and be ready to compete.
You know what's unbelievable with the Eagles snap counts at running back last year? None of them had more than 30% of the snaps. Do you know who led them in snaps last season?
I think Wendell Smallwood.
You got it. 30%.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And Josh Adams led them in rushing? I think
it might have been. I mean, yeah, it might have been. But
it's amazing. Who would have thought that going into the year? Smallwood and Josh Adams, right?
That's why they addressed it.
What do you think of our Chega Whiteside?
Whoever you say it, yeah.
He made, obviously, I thought there was a really interesting statement that Mike Rowe made.
Okay.
And it parlayed out into practice
field. Oh, I know where you're going. Go ahead.
Because they were asking him about contested catches. And they said the one thing about Chega Whiteside is that, yeah, he doesn't have the greatest separation speed in the world. We all know that. But he makes a lot of contested catches in college. And that tends to translate to the pro level. And then, obviously, you saw it yourself,
Adam.
Oh,
my God.
He made a great one.
All right, so this pass, again, this is another Wentz. He's going to throw it only where they could get the receiver can get it. It was in a red zone drill. I don't remember who the defender was on him. And he
was
covered.
Sidney Jones.
Was it Sidney Jones? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, who's also tall.
Yes.
Chega Whiteside is 6'2".
Right.
And he's a former basketball player. And he was covered. He was like glow. And I'm like, this is not going to be caught. So he didn't. He went on a 90. He was covered. He torqued his body at a 90-degree angle. I could see it as I'm looking at you. And he went up and got it. He snatched it and got his feet in the air. I'm like, what did we just see? And I was hoping the Eagles Twitter got it. But anyway, they got some good shots. You could see on their account. But that's what we were talking about. Because when you and I did the post-draft podcast, I said he's going to help them in the red zone. Here we are. That's exactly what he can do. Mike Rowe and Doug Peterson, they got to be loving this.
Oh, all the weapons.
This
different
is crazy. I've covered this team since 1999. I've never seen it this good in pass targets.
At very least, you would think that Chega Whiteside could be a good red zone target where you take Deshaun off the field and maybe even Aguilar, and you go two tight ends with Goddard and Ertz, right, and then you have Alshon Jeffrey on one side, Arcega Whiteside on the other, and you have four really good targets of guys who can make catches in traffic and size and play physically.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Goddard, Ertz, Jeffrey, Arcega Whiteside, there's your four.
Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, Richard Rodgers can do it. Josh Perkins can do it because he had to. And Will Tye, who once in a while for the Giants, he had like, I don't know, like he probably had at least 50 catches for them.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So they're in real good shape on offense, that's for sure.
So let's talk about Dallas Goedert, because you and I have probably talked about it more than anybody going back to the end of last year. The need for this team, this coaching staff, this offensive philosophy to be centered on a two tight end offense to get Dallas Goedert on the field more. Now, when we say that, it's not, we talk about Doug Peterson liking three wides, but last year I think he played more two tight end than anybody in the league. So he clearly does do it.
Correct.
But you look at the talent and you wonder, should this be the 60 to 70% of your offense instead of the 40 to 50%? You know what I'm saying? Like, this kid's talented, Adam.
Oh, he's a beast. He's, I call him, I have a couple names for him. The Incredible Hulk is one of them. You can't really cover him. And there was it's funny, they ran the same play in prayer, very similar to remember the play that called back at a phantom call when Goddard would have scored against Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
They ran one up the seam with him. Like, I know they can't hit him. But what it was is because Wentz led him and he caught it.
Uh-huh.
He's too big. You can't. It's like when you try to cover Gronk, who's maybe an inch taller than Goddard, he's so long that he's just going to box you out like a basketball player. So, last year, because Richard Rodgers got hurt with the knee surgery, Goddard, as the second half grew, he went up actually playing almost half the snaps for the season. He ran up having 48% of the snaps.
Yeah, like 33 catches. I looked. His numbers compared to Zach Ertz's are extraordinarily similar.
Zach
Ertz's rookie year, I should say. Yeah.
Right.
Something like 35 catches, 350 yards. I think Ertz had 8 touchdowns. This kid had 4. That's just opportunity.
His snap percentage to target conversion rate is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only going to grow. So that what's going to happen is, let's say he plays 60% of the snaps. What's going to happen is it's going to be in certain areas where he's going to play more red zone, obviously, because of his size. Then he could actually be the primary backup for Ertz, where you weren't really sure because Perkins was playing. Perkins also playing wide receiver because they were hurting there. Richard Rodgers got hurt, so he had to play. There's a variety of ways they want to use him, and the big one is catching the football. They know it. They know that, they kind of know what they're looking at now.
Yeah.
He is going to be the man in certain areas, and he's a very special talent. This is one I think they're going to get right. And I know, as you and I talked about last year, there was a team that absolutely was going to draft in the first round ahead of the Eagles, but what happened was he was number 2 on their list, and I guarantee
second
that...
Second round, right? Because he was a second round.
Right, but they would have drafted in the first, team.
Yeah.
I guarantee they regret the guy. They're going to wind up regretting the player that they drafted that team because this kid is going to be a beast.
Well, I think, and we'll have it'll be really interesting to see how much 12 personnel Doug uses and what kind of season Dallas Goedert has.
Because he uses him, though, Jeff? Catching the football.
Yeah. No,
I want to see.
If he's on the field, he should
be catching
the ball.
To use 12 personnel more than any other team, but if you're not throwing it to Goddard, then he's just a blocking tight end. They did not draft him to be a blocking tight end. They wanted to be an all-around tight end.
Correct, but I think that gives them the flexibility to play him in line and then play action and then
everything.
Have him release.
Yes,
you know,
I agree.
Five outlets.
Yes.
At this time next year, if he has a great year, we may have a discussion about what do they do? They got two really good tight ends.
Oh, do they keep paying Ertz? Right. Well, that's a great problem to have.
It's first world tight end problem, absolutely. It's New England Patriot type problem there, so that would be a good thing. All right, a big part of the defense, let's focus on three people. Sidney Jones, one, right? He came back. He's right now playing inside-outside, but I don't think people can put much into that because you've got no Ronald Darby, you've got no Jalen Mills, so you really have to mix and match your pieces. I don't think this kid's going to be a slot corner, but they talked, again, Jim Schwartz said he thought he did some good things last year from the inside. To me, he's an outside corner.
Here's my thought on it.
Uh-huh.
Jalen Mills not practicing, Darby not practicing. They had Douglas and
Avonte Maddox
on the outside. They also played Maddox at safety. They were doing everything.
Right, which is what you do in OTAs.
You're moving guys around. That's why I don't make any hard statements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were actually light. They were actually very light at corner because of those injuries. And then, you know, LeBlanc also, who we had on Sirius. What a great story. One of these days we need to talk about him.
Yeah.
He did. He he's their backup slot. I don't think Jones is fast enough in a short area. The slot corner, the reason why teams like smaller slots, because they move faster in a small area.
Correct.
That is a compact position. You need to get in and out very quickly, and it's a nuanced position.
Right, and they teach you in scouting, don't tell me what a player can't do. Tell me what a player can do. So to me, it's not even it's about what you're saying, but it's more about what does he do best. He is a physical, fast, when healthy, cornerback who can ride that highway, or at least did in college, with elite wide receivers and make it difficult for them to catch the ball down vertically, which is what teams are trying to do. I just feel like that's where we have to see him play, and I think we will. I think you'll see it in training camp more to get a real evaluation of whether or not he can stay healthy and be that corner that everybody thought he was going to be 2 years ago when he was a top 15 projection.
They didn't draft him to play. No team saw him as a slot. Now it's
you don't draft a second-round corner to play him in the slot.
It's nice that he can do it, Jeff, but to me, and I know we got this question on Twitter more than once over the last couple weeks, I strongly believe that in the end, it's going to be Jones and Darby. Now, I don't know if it's going to be September or October. We don't know about Darby yet. He's just taking mental reps. I've heard from people that his rehab's going well, but until you get on the field, we don't know.
Right. Well, if that is the case, and I think someone asked about it, so we're kind of getting into it too. If that's the case, I don't see Jalen Mills being a backup the entire year. So I knowing Howie, I feel like the wheels will be spinning in his head. And
you suggested that on our last podcast, right, that maybe they if everybody's healthy,
end of camp type deal. Yeah.
They're not, and that's exactly when, Jeff, when you hope to know about Darby.
Yep.
And you know, by the way, Rodney McLeod's not practicing yet because he can't.
Right.
They have some questions with injuries coming back. That is really the one issue that they have.
Right.
Although I would say defensive end going to OTAs, that to me is a real issue. I'm told Josh Sweat, by the way, looked really good. Not this week because I wasn't looking for him this week, but I was told that at least in their early practices, he looked all the way back from his ankle injury, and he made a difference. Like, you could see how much faster he is.
Right.
Which means he may have lost weight. I don't know. I just know from talking to people that he looked good.
Well, that's good. And Jim Schwartz went out of his way to praise Vinnie Curry, saying how good he looked being back. I think people are scared to death right now of not having Michael Bennett, not having Chris Long, and wondering who's going to step up as the third and fourth defensive ends. And Vinny's going to be the third. It's the fourth. And I keep saying this. I'm trying to shout it from the rooftops that you're relying less on your fourth DN because you're not playing three DNs at one time. You're playing two defensive tackles now in the pass rush, and that's Malik Johnson mostly and Fletcher Cox. So it's, and you have Tim Jernigan. So you're deeper at tackle than you are at end. So it's the more like there's more than one way to skin a cat type thing. But that is also dependent on everyone staying healthy.
I have a hard time believing, though, that they won't go to their so-called NASCAR package where they move a DN inside. Because now, the Eagles will tell you they did it out of necessity because
They didn't have an interior pass rush.
Yeah, and that was a big thing for them. They feel like if Malik Jackson is back to where he was 2 years ago, this will help Fletcher out.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, the way it looks now with Journey, talk about a guy who's got a chip on his shoulder. Watch him in practice. He's got so much more energy. And plus, he was rehabbing last year. He wasn't even practicing last year at this time. But with Ridgeway on the roster and Trayvon Hester, they also like, Fletcher probably does not need to play so many snaps.
No.
Maybe there are times, especially if this team's as good as we think it's going to be, Jeff, if they're a dominant football team and they have a big lead in the fourth quarter, well, you know what? You don't have to play him as much.
Right.
Don't forget, Cox also was not aware of this. Cox played the most snaps of any defensive lineman.
Yes.
80% of the snaps. So, yeah, you don't need to play him as much if you're up big.
All right. I did some research on Jim Schwartz's last 2 years with the Lions and his defensive lines. And his last year there, 2014, Fairley was hurt. So he didn't play Nick Fairley with Ndamukong Suh on the inside as much in the pass rush. But what he did was, I looked at the percentages.
Who's playing there, do you know?
Ndamukong Suh was there. George Johnson, the defensive end.
Oh, from Rutgers, sure.
Glassboro kid. Yeah. And Ziggy Ansah. But they also had a guy named, Andre McCoy or CJ McCoy, a defensive tackle. So what I noticed was that McCoy, as the second defensive tackle, and Johnson as the third defensive end, both played 50% of the snaps. So that to me said that Jim had two pass rushing packages, one that had the NASCAR-like, three DNs and a tackle, and another one that had two DNs, two D tackles. And then I went back to 2013, Adam, and I know
CJ Mosley is your
CJ
talking
Mosley,
about.
I'm sorry, not McCoy, Mosley, yeah. Right. I went back to 2013, and if you look at the snap counts there, Nick Fairley was healthy, first round pick. They put him next to Sue a lot. Both of those guys were the two highest snap percentage guys. So that year, his main pass rush involved Nabokong Sue and Nick Fairley on the inside. So that's two defensive tackles and two defensive ends. So he didn't have a NASCAR package that year.
But you also have to look at who you have at defensive end.
You look at where your talent was.
Right, your talent was exactly fairly. So that's why you look at the Eagles, where's your best talent? Right now, their pass rush is going to come from primarily, I believe, in the inside. So
right.
That's where it is. Now, I still think they could use a veteran DN.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows about Chris Long? He said he's retired. He's not playing because he doesn't want to have a reduced role.
Right.
You never know, though. You never know when it comes to August. We'll see.
All right. Let's get into our Ask the Inside the Birds.
Let's go. You have a lot of questions.
A lot of good questions.
Good
ones. First one comes from Nick Atkins at Eagles 52 Champs. I keep hearing other podcasts talk about the Eagles moving one of their top six corners. I couldn't disagree more. Thoughts? Well, we just kind of went through that. The Eagles have six corners all competing for spots, but six cornerbacks don't make a team. Usually you get 9 or 10 defensive backs, and it's either five corners or four safeties, or 5 and 5 if you keep 10. But I don't know if you're going to keep six corners.
Well, okay, we didn't talk about Avante Maddox. Where are you going to line him up? We don't know that yet. They're moving him now to both sides, safety and corner.
Right.
Where are you going to line him up?
Probably at nickel corner. But
over the block.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, with the availability to move him to safety. But if you keep four safeties, you're probably keeping Malcolm, Rodney, Sendejo, and Countess.
Okay, so they've got five true corners, and then Maddox could play either. Well, he was drafted as a corner, but now he's learned how to play safety.
You want to call him a swing, that's fine.
I'm kind of with Jeff on this. I would trade one of them only until late August, and as Jeff pointed out very well, when it gets to the initial roster cut down to 53,
mm-hmm.
if Mills is healthy, if Jones looks fine, no issues, and Darby looks good,
mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't really pay. Russell Douglas has shown he could play.
Right. It doesn't make sense to have Jalen Mills just sitting on your bench when he has value.
Now, let me put it to you this way. Let's say they're all healthy, right? And you trade Mills.
Uh-huh.
You've got you're relying on Jones and Douglas or Darby. So basically, it's got to be Jones and Darby,
mm-hmm.
and Douglas as your top backup outside corner.
Sure.
Okay.
And then Maddox can, of course, play corner if he needs to.
I think I'm for that. I agree with you.
I mean, look, you can't keep everybody, and you only have a certain number that you're locked into, and mm-hmm. if you have surplus, then you make a deal.
I agree.
That also parlays into the next question from Neil Dye at Dye Neil. He's a new listener from Vancouver, by the way.
Nice.
And he says he loves the content. Do we think Mills gets traded if Jones or Douglas earns a starting job? And I say yes, it's a very strong possibility. We'll see. I would say, look, it's not like they're shopping him now.
He's coming back from a broken foot. You just have to see where he's at.
Right. All right. DC445 at @playing_opossum on Twitter asks, who are your top five future key players in 3 years? Like, in 3 years from now, who are we really going to be talking about that we don't talk about as much this moment?
Let's
combine for
the
five.
The only way we have to say who are the top
Goddard's
players.
Goddard's got to be one, right?
I would say Goddard will be one.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe Derek Barnett will be one?
Yes.
Okay, Barnett being two.
I will cross my fingers on Andre Dillard. We'll see. It should be. They drafted him to be the guy.
Andre Dillard, 3. How about Miles? I'm not ready to put Miles Sanders in that yet.
Oh, really?
I'm just, people think because I'm a Penn State guy that I love this guy. I think he's just got a lot to prove. He's only had one really good year in college, and a lot of those games came against teams that weren't that good, and then the Ohio States and Michigans of the world, he wasn't as successful. So I can't just rubber stamp it. I put more odds on Corey Clement right now being the better overall prospect.
I don't know about that. Yeah.
We'll see.
We love Corey, but I mean, Miles Sanders is more explosive now.
Oh, certainly. I'm not denying that.
I would say this. Corey Clement has shown the ability to do everything. Like, the good thing is he could be their top. Once in 2020,
mm-hmm.
Corey Clement, if it works out well, should be Sanders' backup. And that's got a lot of value to them. Plus, he's a good special teams player, high character guy.
Right.
He's a very valuable guy to have.
All right. So we got three, right? We're not going to agree on Sanders, right? So we'll say Dillard. We'll say Goddard. We'll say, who was the third that we said that we're going to?
Dillard. We said Dillard. You said Goddard. And who else did we say
Sidney
here?
Jones? Or is he too much to prove?
Not ready. I'm not there yet.
Okay. Well, Carson's got to be one, of course.
Well, the obvious one is Carson's number one.
Right.
I would say...
How about Avante Maddox?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the best one.
I put him in the top four there.
This might be another one.
Barnett. So
yeah.
That's five.
It's five. All those guys should be the... should be key players for them in the future.
Yep. I agree. All right, next question, probably our last one. Philly T, at Tommy K, 415. Do you see Dillard getting any time this season at left guard until Peters goes down?
No.
Do you see Maialata switching over to left guard, seeing that? Why is everybody trying to kick Isaac Seumalo out of the left guard when he just signed an extension? He's a good player. I got no problem with Isaac Seumalo.
He's a guard.
I think people just want to see like this Dillard or this Maialata. They just want to see him on the field, and I get that. But you don't just kick a
Am I wrong? Was it the Jacksonville game? Did he play tackle?
A couple years ago he played tackle.
I don't know why I thought he played last season. Anyway, no, they're no plan. They're going to keep it. You know what's been reported out there is true. This is the time of year that you do this. My sense had been for a while that Big V was going to get time at guard. I think he'll stay there. That's kind of more of guesswork on my end, but I think that's probably going to happen. I mean, you kind of see they feel like they're deep and they've got cross training going on. This is the time of year to do it.
Yeah, Isaac Seumalo is going to be your starting left guard unless he gets hurt.
Correct.
I don't think they're going to rush guys into positions that they're not accustomed to just to get him on the
field. And when Kelsey retires, he's the center.
There you go. All right, that will do it for Inside the Birds, the leading podcast in Eagles intel. For Adam Kaplan, I'm Jeff Mosher. We want to thank you all for flying with us. Inside the Birds.